I really wanted to get that message out. I wanted people to know that that this was achievable, and that there was, you know, I felt like there was a lack of education, and that's one thing that I really, really love.
Welcome to Real Estate Agent Superstars. I'm your host, RJ Baxter with ClearPath Home Loans. On the show today is Jordan Peterson of Mile High Modern, and Jordan's going to share with us her journey through the real estate business and what she has done to become so successful. She's got a lot of great tips and advice in this episode. So I hope you really enjoy this interview. Let's get on with the show. Hey, Jordan, how you doing today?
Hey, RJ, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for being on the show today. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be here. This is my first podcast, so.
Cool. That's honored. Awesome. Well, you have quite a real estate business, and that's why I wanted to have you on the show, and just to share what you're doing and give us some wisdom on, you know, your journey through the business. And to start off with, I just wanted to kind of ask you, how did you get started in the business? What was it that drew you to real estate?
I kind of came into real estate in a very interesting way. My mom was in real estate. She's been in real estate since 2001. And growing up, I was always like, oh, I'll never do real estate. It's just not for me. And, you know, fast forward, about 12 years, I ended up, I was working at a job in Boulder. I was bartending, serving. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I did that for a long time, and I actually happened to get stung. Police came in with somebody underage, and I served them. I didn't get the ID quite right, and I lost that job. The reason that's important to the story is because I was at a party and talking to somebody about, you know, my circumstances, that I was looking to get into something, you know, get out of the restaurant business and do something different. And she was like, well, I work for this real estate company and we're hiring. And that real estate company was 8Z Real Estate. And so I started, got my foot in the door with real estate, just, calling leads off of a website. I did that, part-time and then full-time for a while. Yeah. From there, my mom moved here. I started doing transaction management from her, got my license, and, that was that. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Were you actually an agent when you were calling the leads, or more like a ISA lead converter? Person.
Yeah. 8Z had a mega website at the time. It was very popular, called Cohome Finder. So I worked behind that website. You know, people would call wanting to schedule showings, having questions about property, but no, not licensed. So I was just kind of there to gather some intel, and then we would match the leads with the right agent from there.
Okay. Okay. What kinds of things did you learn through that experience that have helped you even through today?
I think talking to people, you know, and I would say that mostly I learned from the restaurant industry, being in the service industry, learning how to talk to people. I always loved, I loved getting the grumpy table, because it was always my goal by the end of their meal to get a smile. And that kind of carried on to, you know, when you're calling people off of a website, it's not always the most welcome greeting. Sometimes it was, but just kind of, you know, learning to talk to people, getting people to open up a little bit more, to trust and to, you know, have, you know, kind of build relationships in that way. I would say that's probably the biggest thing I learned. Aside from, you don't have to be a mega millionaire to buy a house. You don't have to have hundreds upon hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy a house. I had no idea until I was, you know, brought into that industry.
Interesting. So did you, were you naturally just good at talking to people on the phone, or do you have to learn some skills and techniques?
I definitely had to learn some skills. What was nice is it kind of started as they were pretty warm leads, you know, people who were registering on the website or actually reaching out wanting to schedule a showing. So those, and I felt like a lot of the skills, you know, the only difference between walking up to a table that you're serving and, you know, calling somebody that wants to schedule a showing is one's in person and one's over the phone, right? Like you don't know each other. You're just kind of building this relationship with a stranger. So I would say the biggest thing was just learning to ask questions, lots of questions. And, you know, the only mood or the only person I can really control in those moments is myself. So regardless of what I was being met with on the other side is just always kindness, you know, just lead with kindness. That's all you can do. And, can't control anything else. And that's definitely bled through the rest of my life and working this business too.
Yeah, I imagine so. So what kinds of questions do you like to ask to start off with a new prospect to help build that trust and learn more about what they're looking to do?
Oh, man. So, I mean, now I have a process. So I have a process for you know, whether you're moving from out of state, you're a first-time home buyer, or you're a seller, I always start with, you know, a pre-meeting questionnaire. And some of those questions, you know, especially if I'm being contacted and they already have a property in mind, kind of getting to the bottom of what really drew you to this property. Where do you see yourself spending the most amount of time in your home? And then my favorite question is, what will this move accomplish for you? So really helping people get to the bottom of their why, their motivation behind their move, because moving is stressful. Moving is, I've done it twice, you know, in buying and selling homes, and it's been stressful each and every time. So I find if you get to the bottom of your motivation and why you want to do what you want to do and what your goals are, it helps me do my job, and it also helps you, you know, have a little bit of fun in the process, relax a little bit, use that motivation to kind of boost you forward.
Yeah, I bet you get a lot of interesting answers on that and deep answers from people.
Yeah, you know, especially on the listing side, you would think that if you're asking someone like, what will this move accomplish for you, or what's most important to you to get out of the sale, it's like, well, money, right? But it's really not the first answer that I get most of the time. Sometimes it's like, I really love my neighbors. I really want to make sure that it's an owner-occupied buyer for my house. Or, you know, we don't have a lot of time. We've got to, you know, be in our next destination by X amount of time. So you really have to get good at asking questions and tactical empathy to really get to the bottom of what people need, because it's not one size fits all. You know, like I have a process, but how we delineate from that process really kind of depends on a buyer or seller's goals and aspirations and where they want to be.
Yeah. I've heard that term tactical empathy. What does that mean?
Yes. So it's from two books. One book is called Never Split the Difference. It's a book on negotiating by Chris Voss. And then he has another book called The Full Fee Agent. So it's just really about, number one, knowing your value, being set in your process, but also being able to relate to someone in a way where they feel heard and understood, giving them options. So if you say, you know, Jordan, I want to list my house at 1.4 million and I know it's worth 1.2, giving you the options, what can happen with each option, and letting you make those decisions.
Interesting. That's exactly where I heard it. I've heard, what is it? Chris Voss?
Yes.
Chris Voss? Yeah. I've heard him on podcasts. So that's where I heard it.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Oh, that is really good. You know, you're seeking other people's whys. What's your why? Why do you do this? What's your why for real estate?
So I mentioned earlier that one of the things I learned working at HZ was I had no idea that, you know, I could buy a home, that any, you know, that anybody who's making an income and could go buy a home, and that there were different options for down payment and all of this. And I felt like, I really wanted to get that message out. I wanted people to know that, that this was achievable, and that there was, you know, I felt like there was a lack of education, and that's one thing that I really, really love, doing, whether it's your first home or your fifth. Unless you buy homes every couple of years, you're pretty much first time home buyer or first time seller. So I love walking people through the process. But I'm not someone who's driven by being the best or being a top producer or being in the top whatever percentage it is. What drives me to get out of bed every morning and do this job is the people that I get to meet along the way, the people that, you know, you watch them walk into the house and you see their eyes just light up and you realize like they've made that connection. Going through COVID, one of my favorite moments was, you know, we couldn't have kiddos with us for showing. So there was a couple moments where the kiddos didn't get to see the house until closing, and just kind of watching those moments happen. So I've gotten a couple cards with people just telling me how their kids are growing up in the house, how they're starting to walk, and they're decorating their room, or I'll get pictures. All of that is what fills my cup. Just knowing that I'm not helping people find a house or sell a house, but it's really about finding a home, finding a lifestyle, finding, you know, the next best thing for people.
That's really cool. That's, you know, that's something that on the lending side, we don't get as much of that. I mean, we talk about building rapport on the phone. I mean, most of my stuff is over the phone. We meet sometimes with people face to face. I get it a little bit at closing, but that's a really cool aspect of being a real estate agent that I wish we had more of on the lending side. So that's really cool.
I will say, like, the math part of my brain, I feel like I would love that piece, you know, because you've got numbers and numbers don't lie, right? Like when you're analyzing property value, I mean, you could have a whole range and there's no right or wrong answer when you're pricing a property sometimes, just depending on the house itself, which drives the math part of my brain a little bit crazy because I like having the right answer. That's always one thing I've kind of envied with the mortgage side of things. It's like you have numbers, you get to work with the numbers, they don't lie, and then you get to be creative with how you make them kind of work, sometimes magically, sometimes. But
yeah, there are positives for sure.
Yeah.
So after you're an ISA, tell me about how it transitioned into being a real estate agent. What was your first transaction like?
Oh my gosh. My first transaction. So I went, from being an ISA, and then I went and started doing transactions for my mom. So I had a good baseline of how the transaction worked, how the contracts worked. Mm-hmm. So getting my license was a breeze. And then my first, it's hard to tell which one was my first deal, but I'll talk about my first listing. That was just mine. Cause of course I worked, you know, my people that I brought in, cause I worked, you know, a lot on my mom's deals kind of leading up to, just kind of getting experience, which I was very fortunate. But my first listing, it was actually some friends of mine, and I don't think they'll mind me telling this story. Let's hope not. But, I came over, to do an open house, and we were supposed to have an open house at, I think it started at like 11, and I got there at like 10:30, and they had gone to Great American Beer Festival the night before, and they were still home.
Oh, geez.
yes. And like the dogs had tracked mud all in. I was like mopping the floors. We were like getting everything ready. But it was just really funny. Because they were friends, so we were all kind of laughing. We laugh about it now, but it was just one of those things where you're just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
We're gonna make this work. We're gonna figure it out.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Wow. So then how did things progress in the business for you? Because you've obviously built a really strong business. What were some of the early things that came into focus for you?
So I worked I worked with my mom. So as I was licensed, I was still her, you know, assistant and transaction manager as I was kind of building my business, which I'm really grateful for because I got a ton of experience that way. By the way, if you're ever talking to a new agent, or if you're a new agent listening to this, like, that is the number one piece of advice I can give you is get, you know, find a mentor, find an agent that needs help, and just do the grunt work. Because as soon as you learn how to do that, the rest becomes a lot easier. But we did, you know, early on, we kind of did Brian Buffini was some of the coaching that we did. So just getting used to calling and just making sure. Buffini, I feel like, was a little bit more in your face, and we ended up, you know, transitioning out of kind of that oh, by the way, mindset of like just making sure everybody you knew you sold real estate, and letting it kind of come up a little bit more organically. And so we kind of transitioned. We did, I did Ninja. You heard Ninja?
Oh yeah.
Ninja Selling. Yeah. I did Ninja for the first time. I was pregnant with my son in 2019 was the first time I did Ninja. And that was pretty life-changing and eye-opening for my business, for sure. It definitely helped it grow. Mainly that it gave me permission to let go of like the hypothetical, you know, the, what word am I looking for? Kind of letting go of like always having to wear the real estate. I don't wear name badges, but you know, metaphorically wear the real, I'm a realtor name badge all the time, and just really focus on forming relationships, getting to know people, asking questions, and kind of, it always seemed like real estate organically came up. I didn't have to try to push, that I was a real estate agent or like, did they have anybody that I could help? It was really just about connecting with people, fostering relationships, listening for change. So if someone mentions to me that, you know, they're expecting another baby or, you know, getting a new job, you know, that kind of triggers things in my brain that maybe, you know, to just keep them top of mind. And I think that was probably the biggest thing, just that like transition from like treating every person as like, oh, I'm in real estate to here's this person. How can I leave them better than I found them?
Mm-hmm. I love that. So yeah. Did Ninja help with, I don't know specifically Ninja, like I haven't taken the course.
Okay.
Did they help you with, did you learn techniques there on building your business and lead generation, anything like that? Or what other stuff was in there?
Yeah. I mean, everything. I mean, Ninja, you walk away, it's a very intensive 4 or 5 day training. You walk away with, you know, lead generation or prospecting. They really talk a ton about that. They talk a lot about mindset, which I think is so different than some other trainings out there. Or, you know, a lot of trainings do that now, but they're on the forefront of it. When no one else was talking about doing gratitudes and affirmations, Ninja was out there. This should be the first thing you're doing. And also processes for buyers and for sellers. So you walk away, they talk about negotiating, they talk about, you know, doing real estate reviews. So it's really kind of all encompassing. If I could go back as a brand new agent and start with one training from the get-go, it would be that one, 100%. Yeah.
Interesting. What other piece of advice would you have for a new agent right now?
Oh, get really clear on boundaries, you know, start becoming the master of your own time and your own schedule, because it's very appealing to get into real estate because it's flexible and that can lead to some destructive behaviors, you know, if you're not careful. So yeah. being cognizant early on, like I love how when we were scheduling this, you're like, oh, I have my hour of this, you know, from this time. So can we do it at this time? You know, treat those appointments with yourself like you would an appointment with a client. So whether that's, you know, going to the gym or making your phone calls or time with your family, like whatever that looks like, get really clear on what your ideal looks like, ideal week looks like, and stick to it as best you can.
Yeah. I think that's so key because boundaries are so important, and you're right. I mean, same thing in lending, it can get out of control where you're working 80 hours a week and you get addicted to more closings. Like, this thing has to be done right now. And, you know, really, it's probably not the most important thing. You know, could that thing wait till tomorrow? Or does it really right. matter to close one more transaction? Or should you go do something with your kids? So
yeah.
I think that's so neat.
I remember I had a business coach ask me, how long are your listing appointments? I was like, well, like, I don't know, an hour and a half, 2 hours sometimes. She's like, okay. Would you ever answer a phone call in that appointment? I'm like, no, never. She's like, and is everything okay after that two hour appointment? If someone waited 2 hours to hear from you? I'm like, yeah. She's like, why would it be any different with your family? Why would it be any different when you're doing something for yourself? Like, you're in an appointment, you have that time. Everything can wait, you know, a couple hours. There's no emergencies in real estate. Rarely. I shouldn't say no, never.
Right,
I'm sure we've all got a story or two, but yeah, I thought that was the nice like brain shift for me, and definitely something I'm still working on. But I've gotten a lot better about it, you know, leaving my phone away from dinner and trying to make sure that, you know, anything that I might need to deal with is wrapped up before, you know, family time or whatever that might look like.
It's always a struggle, something that, I mean, I constantly have to work on that, and it's
yeah.
hard.
Yeah.
I'll just share a quick story about myself. I had a moment probably 12 years ago, or not 12 years ago, 10 years ago. We went to Disney World as a family. My kids were probably 6 and 7 then, 6 and 8, something like that. I spent the entire time on my phone in line and walking in between attractions. I was up until 1 a.m. working on files, tired the next day. And that was like my defining moment where I thought something's got to change here. And this, you know, is it really that important that I'm taking these phone calls and everything? My kids aren't going to be little like this forever.
Right.
And I actually I've gotten better on that, and I'm still not perfect. It's always something to work on, but, I asked an agent the other day, what will your legacy be? And her answer was that her kids saw that she built a business where she could be there for them when they needed her and really raise them the right way. So that was her legacy. And I thought that was so powerful.
Oh man, I've got chills. Yeah, that's beautiful.
It wasn't that she closes 1,000 transactions or that she's
yeah.
the top agent town or whatever. So what will your legacy be?
Oh man, I was like, don't ask that. How am I going to follow that up? No, I mean, similarly, I think just because, you know, we have access to so much information online, especially as a parent. It's almost like my mom was like, I almost feel bad that you have, it's just almost too much information about do this and do that. And, but what I am thankful for is there are so many ways that you don't have to reinvent the wheel when it comes to parenting. But yeah, 100% and wholeheartedly my children that, you know, I can raise them to be strong-willed and entrepreneurial, and, that they can see, that they can, you know, have a life and not burn out. That, you know, family is most important, and to be kind. I mean, that's all mm-hmm. Whenever I think of like legacy, if I looked back and watched my children, it wouldn't be how much money they have or how successful they are. It would really be about like, what kind of relationships are they cultivating? Are they kind? Are they compassionate? Those I think are the biggest things I could want to leave behind for them.
That's really cool. And yours are little, right?
They're little. Yes.
Yeah.
My oldest is 4.5 and my youngest is 10 months.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. Mine are almost grown. There's 17 and 16.
Oh my gosh. So college talks and all of that, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We were just down in Tucson looking at Arizona with my son.
That's right. So, oh, cool.
Yep. So it's just a different thing, you know, and every stage is awesome.
Yeah. It's good. I feel like it's good for them to leave, you know, my husband's mm-hmm. from here and he went away to school. And it really made him appreciate, Boulder and Colorado for him to kind mm-hmm. of get out. And I mean, he went to University of Vancouver, British Columbia in Vancouver. So it's not like he was slumming it by any means, but it's still, you know, the sunshine and all of that were definitely things that he missed. So I would want that for my kids to just kind of like, okay, go, you know, go experience something else and then come back.
Totally. My kids are adamant to get out of Colorado for college.
Oh, good. So
We're all
good. Great. And Arizona's not too far. So.
No. And it's not a bad place to visit.
Yeah, that's true. Go in the winter. There you go. Yeah. Perfect.
Well, tell me a little bit about what kinds of things are you planning with your business moving forward? I mean, do you have some new projects you're working on, things that you want to accomplish over the next year or two?
Yeah, so I would say over the next year and kind of going through a lot of my business planning, really my biggest goal is to get my business to a place where it's repeatable and predictable. And anything else would be, you know, anything else over that would just be, you know, icing on the cake. And so really just dialing in systems, really dialing in how we're loving on people, really dialing in events and getting that so systemized that my business can be, you know, virtually predictable every single year. And, you know, kind of incrementally growing it from there. That's kind of my main focus right now. Yeah.
Okay. So I thought you said we, do you have a team?
I do have a team. Yeah. So, Kim Wilson, she's an agent on my team. So she has been amazing. So she also started out as a newer agent, and was, you know, working with me, getting experience. So she helps me with a ton of back-end items. She's there kind of helping me make the process just even more smooth. I have a lot of ideas and it's really great to have her because she'll kind of run with those ideas. And, you know, if it's like, hey, I want to start doing this for birthdays, like she's out researching and sends me links or sends me ideas, or, hey, I want to do this pop by. She'll do the research and kind of, you know, put something together for me to approve. So it's just really nice to have, you know, to have something that your brain can like, hey, I have all of these ideas and you kind of need someone to facilitate and also give feedback. Yeah. She puts together lovely closing baskets. So that was always one thing. I don't know what it was or how many checklists I had in my arsenal. I would wake up every morning of closing and be like, oh, closing gift. So it's just so nice that she puts together these beautiful baskets and they're all ready to go. She's become an invaluable part of the team for sure.
That's really cool. It's important to have an implementer. I've also found it's easy to come up with ideas, but to actually implement them is a challenge sometimes.
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
What are you guys struggling with right now? What's one thing that's maybe an obstacle that you're trying to overcome?
You know, I would say probably a lot of real estate agents are dealing with the same thing, but just inventory, right? Like how do we, you know, get the word out there about different ways to, you know, circumvent people sitting on really low interest rates, probably one of the lowest rates they'll maybe ever see, and, you know, kind of get up and make those moves that they need to make. Just because buyers are out, it's really slim pickings out there at most price points. So I think that's probably the biggest thing that we're, you know, kind of dealing with and always kind of mulling over, like, how do we get the word out? How do we, you know, change our conversation and encourage others to change the conversation around the market and real estate and encourage people to move? Yeah.
So how do you do that? Because I know a lot of people are struggling with that. I struggle with that.
Yeah. I think it's just really comes down to having those conversations and being really detailed about what people's goals are. Of course, if like someone is perfectly content in their home and, you know, I would say those like just for the sake of moving buyers, those are the ones that are tougher to move right now. But even the ones that maybe need a little bit more space, they're just kind of making the homes work for them. One thing that and you've probably been having this conversation. It was kind of mind blowing to me, but, you know, asking people, like, are they really looking at the full picture? You know, especially if you're a seller who's sitting on a 3% interest rate that you feel like you're never going to see again. What's the big picture? What other debt do you have? Do you have car payments? Do you have HELOCs? Do you have personal loans? Do you have credit cards? What does that entire monthly look like? If you sold your house and you could use the equity to pay off that debt and buy a new house, yes, your interest rate might be higher, but is your net monthly payment lower, you know, by kind of consolidating and still allowing yourself to move on? So I think it requires a lot of creativity on our end and on lenders' ends right now, really, to just kind of be creative and see where, you know, we can kind of play Tetris in ways to make it really work for people.
Yeah, we're definitely having a lot of those kinds of conversations with people.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you mentioned that. It's definitely a key piece of it.
Right. Because sometimes you only look at that little segment, that mortgage payment, right? That's the only thing you're looking at that changes. And maybe there's other ways that you can kind of consolidate and make it make sense and get the house that you need, right? The more space or the different location or the better school district or whatever it is that your goal is to get.
Yeah. And it comes all the way back to your question of why people are doing this. You know, it's rarely I've found about the payment or the mortgage. You know, it's not that they're moving for another reason. So do you really want to be in your current house, or are you blowing the doors off because you just had another child and you don't have enough bedrooms and the backyard's terrible for the dog and you want to be in a better school district and, you know, those kinds of things. And if we can figure out ways to creatively make the monthly more palatable, you know, people can get better. But with the inventory thing, are you seeing a little bit more? I've heard there's maybe just a touch more, but
I would say it depends on the area. You know, we're definitely seeing an increase in inventory in kind of the Denver metro area. Some areas in Boulder County are having more inventory. You know, Boulder is one, Erie is one because of all the new construction. Louisville and Lafayette, still pretty tight. So it just kind of depends on where you're looking. I feel like throughout COVID and kind of post-COVID and like 2021 and 2022, the Boulder County and Denver metro markets were kind of mirrors of each other. We could kind of look at both and gather more data and make, you know, assumptions based on that. But now they definitely are delineated some. You've really got to be, especially if you're, you know, thinking about listing your house, or, you know, you're going on a listing appointment, you really have to be getting as micro into those markets as you really can, just because they can vary so differently from market to market. So yes, of course, like when we look at any like chart of new listings, we always see like February to May, usually listings are going up. So we can expect more listings to come on the market. It's just what happens every year. Now the biggest thing I think is going to be interest rates. So if interest rates, you know, that's a question for you as far as when you think interest rates might start to come down a little bit more, but if they do start to come down, you know, middle to towards the end of the year, we could have a total shift in our market. You know, usually we see, new listings go down in June and July, and then they kind of spark back up in October, September, October. And then kind of go down through the end of the year, you know, that I think those graphs could change if interest rates start to come down. So,
yeah. What, how do you think that'll affect things? I mean, obviously there's going to be more buyers that'll probably choose to jump in. Do you think it'll affect listings?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think if, as soon as those interest rates start to come down, even if they start to get into like even the high fives, I think the person that's making the jump from 3% to there, the closer that gap gets, the closer we're going to be to getting some of those sellers off the fence. The ones who are just kind of waiting. There are also a lot of buyers who would sell if they could find the right thing. So it's kind of a vicious cycle in that way.
Yeah. So to just pick up overall activity probably.
Yeah.
If rates come
down. I think so. Right.
Yeah. And I think they will. I think it's likely they're going to come down. There's a lot of reasons for that. But
when do you think? $1 million question.
No,
I mean, tomorrow. Yes. Love it.
We've been expecting rates to come down, I mean, at any time.
2 years.
There were people predicting rates would come down in late 2022 from when they spiked up that summer.
Right.
So, you know, all bets are off as far as that's concerned, but there's so many things that could be catalysts to that. Like, as soon as the job market turns around and the jobs picture looks worse, it's likely that that will cause the Fed to start reversing their policies and lower rates. And we could see rates start to come down, especially if inflation remains in check.
Yeah. That definitely seems but again, you know, and just going back to, you know, what your motivations are and really like whether you need to buy or sell, like doing it when it makes the most sense for you. Like timing the market has never worked well for anyone. it's just too hard to predict. You know, just kind of doing things when you need to do them. You know, there's always going to be pros and cons. You know, right now, if you need to sell your house, you're going to have very little competition. Then that means you're probably going to get the best net and the best terms for the for the transaction going forward. If you wait, you might, you know, have more options when you buy. So there's always pros and cons. So it's really just kind of leveraging like what's most important to you, when do you want to do it, and how do we take those next steps forward for sure.
Well, and I mean, going back to the rate conversation, no one can predict the future. We don't know if it's going to be a buyer's or a seller's market 6 months from now. So I have people that have literally been waiting to time the market for 5 years and they still haven't bought.
Yeah.
Or maybe,
totally.
Maybe longer even.
Yeah.
You probably do too. And it just baffles the mind. And if they would have jumped in 5 years ago instead of waiting to time the market, they'd be very happy they did it.
I had a client, and I use them as an example quite a lot, because the first house we were under contract together, it was $257,000. Then, you know, the inspection was terrible, so he ended up not going forward with that house. And then he was like, I'm going to wait and see what the market does. I'm going to, you know, wait and see. The next time, you know, probably, I don't know, a year and a half later, 2 years, we were under contract at $450,000. Same thing, just terrible luck with inspection. And then they decided to wait again. The house they ended up buying was $650,000. So this goes to show you that, you know, not saying that he should have bought the homes that, you know, weren't great on inspection. He just should have kept looking at that time, right? And found something else versus waiting for the market to go down. Because it's just, you know, when you zoom out at pricing over time, pricing is incrementally going up. The only time we've had it go down was during, you know, the housing crisis that we had in 2007 and 2008.
Every recession, housing's done pretty good except for that one.
Right. So
I have a great story that's a positive one about a family that I helped back in 2013, I think it was. And they were super hesitant. You know, at the time, real estate had started to go up a little bit again. They thought, you know, it's going to crash again like it did in 08. So they were really hesitant, and they ended up moving forward on a house in Lakewood. It was around $250,000 for a house, 4-bedroom house in Lakewood.
Wow.
And they sold it. Yeah, they sold it 6 or 7 years later, around $500,000.
Yes.
Paid off all their debt. All their debt, and still had $100,000 down on the next house because they were starting to have kids then. And so, I mean, what a huge success story that was. I mean, they were super thrilled.
Yeah.
So, and even though housing's expensive now, but it's likely historically it's going to keep going up.
Right.
So
there's no time like the present. You know, it's twofold, right? Like, buy when it makes the most sense, but also buy as soon as you can. it's both. It's got to make sense, right? It's got to make sense for you. As soon as, like, you know, those things lined up, you can get financing, you have down payment, you're feeling comfortable with, you know, where the market's at, or maybe you're not, you need some coaching or education on where the market's at. Like, that's go ahead. There's nothing else you need to wait for.
Yeah. Yeah, there's the saying, what's the best time to plant a tree? It was 10 years ago, and the second best time right now.
Yes. So. Yeah, totally. Yeah, you haven't missed out. Those that are like, you know, there's people like me who, you know, I've done well on a couple of houses, but I still wish that instead of being in college in 2007 and 2008, that I was buying up real estate, like really missed that, you know, but oh, well, you know, you do it now.
Can't go back.
Can't go back.
Yeah, totally. Well, it's been really awesome to have you on the show, Jordan. I really appreciate you taking the time, and it's been awesome to chat with you.
Yeah, same to you, RJ. This was fun.
Awesome. Well, have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you so much for joining us today for that interview. Hope you enjoyed it and got a lot of great information from it. Please subscribe to our channel on YouTube and on the different podcast platforms. That's how the word gets out. And if you enjoyed the show, please consider leaving a 5-star review to let other people know how much you enjoyed the show. Once again, my name is RJ Baxter with Clear Path Home Loans. Have a great rest of your day.